Welcome to Sport Faith Life with Brian Bolt and Chad Carlson, the podcast that meets at the intersection of sport and faith. Sport Faith Life is free and available on Apple and Spotify, and if you have not already, visit the new Sport Faith Life YouTube channel where you can view the podcast as we discuss the intersection of sport and Christianity. Hit that subscribe button or leave us, of course, a five-star review on whatever platform you are listening on. Today on Sport Faith Life, we speak with Brian Smith and Ed Uzinski, authors of Away Game, A Christian Parent's Guide to Youth Sport. Youth sports has changed a lot in the last two decades, so this is a topic relevant to us all. We're so excited to talk to Brian and Ed, so let's get started.
Well, we are so excited to have Brian Smith and Ed Uzinski with us today. Great to have you with us, guys. Looking forward to this conversation. Let's start with our first question. Tell us a little bit about sport in your life. Ed, why don't you start?
Sport in my life currently is dominated by youth sports, coincidentally. We've got four kids, and they've all been playing sports like crazy, and that's kind of what's taken over my life for the last 15 years, is more their involvement in sports rather than mine.
Brian, what do you got?
Yeah, I have a high schooler, a middle schooler, and an elementary school son. So my oldest and youngest play youth sports right now, so my life is dominated by football, youth sports, but I'm also the cross-country coach at our local high school, and so I do a lot of coaching and a lot of running with the team.
Guys, having spent the last Saturday, having spent 11 and a half hours in a high school gym watching volleyball the last Saturday, I can resonate. This is good.
Your ears are still ringing, probably. Yep. And Brian, I see are you still a golf coach, Brian Bolt?
I am. Actually, I'm fresh off a tournament the last couple of days. So I got in late last night, and we're rolling again right in the middle of our fall season. But I'm too old for this podcast because my kids are all grown. No grandkids yet, so I'm in that weird window of fewer youth sports right now.
Okay. Well, my ninth grader just decided out of the clear blue sky a month ago that he wanted to golf after never having golfed ever in his life. He's on the golf team right now in high school. Yeah.
Let's go. I'll start recruiting him tomorrow. That sounds
okay.
Good.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah, yes, that's what we're here to talk about.
Well, let's hear a little bit about faith in your life, Ed.
Faith in my life. Well, I did not grow up in a Christian home, but I became a Christian when I was a freshman at Kent State University back in 1988. And actually through two sport ministries. I was involved with a guy named Ted Schumacher who worked with FCA. And then Bill and Paula Pugh were athletes and action staff. And, you know, for those who don't know, those are ministries that work with college and professional athletes mostly. And I was just fortunate to have people that intersected my life at that time and gave me a real Bible foundation. We were just talking about this the other day. Like, the best thing that I got out of my time with them is that they taught me the Bible, which has just changed the trajectory of the last three decades of my life. Besides meeting Jesus, I just needed the Word to kind of change the way I was viewing everything. And that's kind of put me on the course that I'm on now, which is still trying to work with athletes and trying to live in that intersection of faith and sport at the same time.
Yeah, I'll go more recent. I've been sensing from the Lord that He wants me to trust Him with bigger things, in my life, trust Him for bigger things in my life. And so the last few months feel like my prayers have been bigger and bolder, maybe riskier than they have in a very long time. And so it's a fun place to live where I feel like I'm trusting God for things that I just can't do on my own, which seems like we should all be living in that space, but I haven't been for a long time. So I'm in a fun season right now with God.
Yeah, Brian, I love the way you characterize that as a fun season. A lot of times when we think that way, we think of it more as a risky season, a season where, I'm having a difficult time giving over control of my life. And yet, you're taking a playful approach, which I think fits really well to the way what you write about and what we'll talk about some today. I think I'd love to have both of you gentlemen give me something about your background or your history, your hobbies, some sort of activity, something unusual about each of you to help our audience get to know you. But I just want to add this too. So I think it's also important for people to know what you're doing. So let's throw that in too. Like, what is your work?
Go ahead, Brian, you go first.
Yep, I can start. So I've been on staff with the Sports Ministry Athletes in Action for 17 years now. And so I spent the first little over a half of that time working in campus ministry, largely at the University of Wisconsin, Madison. So I was working with the Badger athletes, leading Bible studies, discipleship. 6 years ago, moved to Michigan, which is where my wife and I grew up. And I have a role right now within Athletes in Action on our Ultimate Training Camp teams. And so it's a 6-day camp that we run all over the world, helping athletes integrate faith and sport. And I also do a lot of writing. And so I mentioned too, I'm a high school track and cross country coach on top of all of that. An interesting fact about me that a lot of people don't know, I am a pig farmer. So I have I'm staring at 3 pigs right now in my backyard, one of which just had a litter of 6. And so we raise, they're called Cooney pigs, and we sell them to people on Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist.
Fantastic.
You are our first pig farmer. Hopefully not our last, but our first pig farmer. We could spend the whole time talking about that, but yeah, awesome. Ed, what do you
really
got?
Good. Well, I'll go in reverse. So I was, and again, none of y'all know me, so this won't seem as jarring as it is to the friends who do know me that find this out, but I was an exchange student after my senior year of high school and spent a year over in Italy as a foreign exchange student. And that might even kind of dovetail into what I'm doing now, because it's been that curiosity about different cultures and just wanting to understand why people do what they do, why they think the way that they think. I wound up doing a PhD in American culture studies about 15 years ago. I love studying cultures. But there's kind of a bizarre mix of things that I've had my hands in really for the last decade. So I still do this faith and sport ministry. Like Brian, I said, I work for Athletes in Action for 33 years. So spent a lot of time thinking in this arena, but I also wrote a book, and this has been part of my ministry for a long time too, called Untangling Critical Race Theory. So I've been in the kind of cross-cultural ministry, racial literacy world as kind of a subtext to that faith and sport ministry the whole time I've been on AIA staff, and that's intensified since I wrote that book last year. And then my wife and I speak at marriage conferences for Family Life. We speak at the Weekend to Remember Family, Weekend to Remember Marriage Conference for 20 years now. We've been on that team. And so we do lots of marriage retreats at churches and all over the place. So it's kind of a weird mix, race and sport and marriage. But I keep getting, like, doors keep opening in all three of those arenas. And I get to keep walking through them at this stage of life.
Well, you're right, Ed. I didn't know you. And that's fascinating. That's a great history and could give us a lot of directions to go in. I love, you know, all of those kind of stem from what you started with, which was your curiosity, right? You started moving in that direction and you've just sort of kept that going.
Yeah.
So very fascinating. Thanks for sharing all of that. I want to, there's so much to talk about in the world of youth sports, and you guys decided to address some of these conversations head on by writing a book together. And the book is called Away Game, A Christian Parent's Guide to Navigating Youth Sports. A really, you know, hot topic from moment to moment in people's lives. And you all three just talked about how intense the season of youth sports is, particularly in the United States. And every parent that I talk to that is involved in this just seems overwhelmed by it, but also full of questions. And the one thing that they always say is, like, I feel like I'm navigating this on my own. I don't know how to make these decisions. And so good for you for sort of diving into this and writing a book for Christian parents who want to try to figure out what's going on in the world of youth sports. Thank you for doing that. And this is a little bit of a you know, boring overview, but I think it's important for you to just say, okay, how did this come together? And then just give us a little bit of a preview of the book.
Yeah. So it came together because we were parents that needed some help. We've been saying this for a long time. We needed an intervention about a decade ago when we started coaching and we and our kids started to play. And so we were immersed in the youth sport world as Christian men, and our wives, you know, as couples, we're trying to figure out now what exactly does this mean for us. And so, you know, again, our lives have been sports. We were athletes, you know, through college and beyond, and our background is totally immersed in sports. And we figured, like, we think we understand this world, but this train was moving really fast and in a direction that I was not expecting. And there just wasn't a lot of time to even hardly get feedback as you're making decisions about what teams to play and do we really need to do this additional training and do we really have to buy that equipment and, you know, just where do we go with all of this? And so Brian and I realized we were in that same season and looked around and said, there really isn't hardly anything for Christian people who are trying to think better about the youth sport experience. There just hadn't been much done 10 years ago. And frankly, there hasn't been that much done even to this day, which we can talk more about why that might be within the church. But we said, look, we've at least got, this is our background. This is our ministry. Now we're experiencing it. And a decade in, Brian just came to me last year and said, look, we really, if there isn't anything out there for us, then maybe we could write something that'll be helpful to other people and to us, frankly, because even as we're writing, we're still being confronted with our own words every day, literally. Because I really don't want my son to play golf. I want him to practice basketball. But well, he wants to play golf, so I need to let him play golf. Okay, I just kind of need to keep going over the things that we've been talking about that's best for him instead of what's best for me. So that's
I'm
going to
pray
for
your heart, Ed. He should play golf, no doubt about it.
Okay, let me preview the book then, because that was the second part of your question, Brian. We're really going down two parallel lanes in the book. The first one is we want people to understand what it is, what we call the youth sport industrial complex, what it is trying to do to both us and our kids, that it is not value neutral. It's actually forming us. It is shaping us oftentimes in the ways of the world. And so we're trying to give language and categories for Christian parents, coaches to say that this is the direction this beast and machine is going and how it's shaping us along the way. And so we need to understand what it's trying to do. And then secondly, we don't have to completely eject from the machine, that there are ways that we can live faithfully within it. There's practical things we can do. There's essentially we can use it to disciple our kids if we change the way we are watching in our own value system as parents. And so we use language like you have a front row seat as a parent to seeing your kid go through basically every emotion possible as you're watching them play sports. And you can then use that as conversation fodder for the car ride home, or you can use it for discipleship. You can see how they interact with teammates and coaches and referees, and see, like, this is a really good opportunity to see strengths and weaknesses and gaps in my son or daughter and actually find ways to have it be conversation starters to grow them up in the Lord.
So part of what makes this really interesting, this book, is you guys are sort of sharing some of your own experiences, right? A lot of the chapters start with one of the two of you talking about a story that something that you experienced that either went well or didn't go well. And it makes it really relatable, right? That you're both humans. You're both, you know, sinful beings like the rest of us. And we fall prey to the trappings. And some of what I hear you're getting at is, like, the reason for the book is, well, if we're not comfortable doing this as sort of sport ministry professionals, well, then who would be, right? So you begin with some of those stories, right? Not every chapter, but most have some stories. And that was really helpful for me as a reader. What else are you using as the background for the ideas that you're coming to, right? Talking about particular spiritual values, moral values, talking about then actually application pre-game, you know, in-game, at post-game, those types of things. What are you using as the basis for coming up with these arguments that you have?
Yeah, that's a great question that I'm not sure anybody's asked us yet. So that's a really good one, Chad. And there is definitely a list of lanes that we were going down. One of them is just personal experience. So again, it's having the opportunity to interview ourselves, college athletes, for years, and just sort of intuitively absorbing from them what their experiences have been. Again, especially in the last decade to 15 years, and absorbing just how unhappy so many college athletes are with what their journey has been and how unfun it's been. And it's interesting because for so many youth sport parents, this is like the pinnacle of what they want for their child, is that he or she would be a collegiate athlete. Like, that's what's promised from the time they're 6 years old on in the youth sport industrial complex, that we can get them to maximize their athleticism and they'll have a chance to play on a team post high school. And year after year, we get to be involved with athletes that they don't really enjoy that anymore. And so that's been fascinating to understand why, and to understand how their identity's been shaped and malformed, as Brian was alluded to. It's been like deformed in the process of playing sports. And so as collegiate ministers, we wind up spending a lot of our time trying to reprogram them, to help them to be transformed by the renewing of their mind and not being conformed anymore to this, in this case, sport culture that shaped them to think a certain way. So besides the college athletes, we're just having experiences in interacting with other parents. So that's the other experience level, I think, that we're absorbing. We are parents, and so we've got our own experiences, but we're also listening to and watching and interacting with other parents. And that really helped form why we felt like a lot of the time in the book we needed to be addressing us as parents and just kind of nudging us to say, hey, have you thought about it this way? Do you realize that this spending all this money is actually not producing what you want? That this car ride home and you dumping a 2-hour list of correction is actually not going to produce what you want. You know, there's a lot of that going on in the book. So go ahead, Brian. Where else have we gotten information from, and how else were we informed?
Yeah, I think if I remember right, we started with just kind of listing how is the youth sport industrial complex forming us in ways that are anti-gospel. And so we had a list of 15 to 20 different things, and then we began to explore, yeah, if this youth sports machine is leaning us towards more a self-centeredness type posture, us and our kids, what would be the opposite of that? Well, it would be an other-centered posture. It would be love. If the youth sport industrial complex is leaning us towards anxiety and pressure, what would be the opposite of that, that the Bible would uphold as a value? It would be a posture of peace. And so we just kind of, and we had a much longer list, and a lot of them didn't make the book. But yeah, we kind of, instead of starting with the Bible, we started with, hey, how are we being malformed? And let's explore, can we actually do this God's way instead?
Which is interesting, too, because there's actually, we said there's not a lot written for Christians, but there actually is a whole industry out there, people doing research on just the effect of doing youth sports this way. There's been some really good books that have been written and research that's been done. And so we were informed by that too, to see that the way this is going is not actually working. So we of all people as Christians have an opportunity to make it better, to actually make it work, that you can have a different kind of relationship with your child on the other side of this, and they will be deeper followers of Jesus if we take on a different identity across that journey as their parents. So we're not just looking at their stat line, but we're watching for virtue development. We're not just concerned about getting them training so they can hit the, you know, pitch on the outside corner in baseball, but we're actually asking them questions about their interaction with their teammates, you know? So it just takes a reordering of our own thinking to hopefully get a different result at the end.
Yeah, and I hear that, I see that in the book, and also I hear in your voices this tension that continues to work back and forth, this idea that, okay, we're involved in this, but it feels like we're constantly rowing upstream, right? We're going in the other direction to try to pull away. And so I wonder if I can ask this kind of question, you know, related to that tension. What is the value of youth? What would you say the value of youth sport is if we're constantly pulling, you know, in the other direction? In other words, Brian described it as, you know, this youth sport industrial complex that we don't need to withdraw from. So that must mean that there's some value there. And you also talked about all of the, you know, unhappy athletes. You know, they continue to climb the ladder. They finally achieve what they're looking for and they're unhappy. What is the value of pursuing excellence? What is the value of maintaining your space in a youth sport environment and then into like high school and college?
Yeah, I would start by saying, and Ed, you can chime in after, the one of the biggest values is it's still an avenue where we can play. And we talk about this in the book that we think there is a biblical argument to be made that God would celebrate and uphold a high value of play. And for all the negative things that the youth sport industrial complex does and is and continues to be, it still is a place where if we allow it to be, our kids can play and enjoy the good gift of sport. And is that not our role as Christians on this earth, is to redeem spaces like this back to what they could be? And so we talk in the book, like, yeah, we could all leave the system and form our own groups and holy huddles and try to do this differently. But we really think there is value to, as Christians, to stepping into the space and seeing if we can redeem it back to some semblance of play and fun and laughter.
Yeah, and if we went to the 10,000 foot level for a second, I love what Brian just said. I mean, there's different forms of Christian engagement in the world and different ministry philosophies. And I think without even us ever talking about this, Brian and I very much come from a Christ transforming culture perspective. Like we have to ask that question about every secular space that we step into, the business world, school. You know, everywhere that we go in culture, we're going to have to ask that question. What's the value of being here? And what does it look like to redeem that space on my watch, on our watch? That's really kind of what we're even saying with this youth sports things. For our kids, we want to just get back to play and letting them enjoy this good God-created thing, which Brian Bold, I know you talk a lot about this and have written about this. Which again, most people just don't even think about that. Like we're getting back to something that God gave us that is a good thing. Entrepreneurs have turned that into a business, which even in that, it's not all bad. But that just usually means that when there's tons of money involved, what's best for the kids starts to go down the list of priorities. So we need to recognize that. But what the biggest thing that's missing is the play. And so what does it look like to redeem this space on our watch? What would it look like for us as parents to create a different kind of experience, not just for our kids, but all those parents that we have opportunity to influence and be around? That we actually become sport missionaries, which is sort of a lofty and intimidating title to have to wear. But God doesn't have you sitting in those bleachers with those particular set of parents just, again, so that you can hopefully get a scholarship someday. You're there for some other reason that involves redeeming. Again, I don't want to go too high, but redeeming a dark space, something that has been influenced by our spiritual enemy. And God has us there to be light, to be salt, to be something different. Just kind of exciting when you think about it. I mean, that's a great way to get up and face every day. Whatever lane it is that he's given us to run in, we get to go there and shine a light in dark spaces. Well, what a great way to live.
I just talked about this in my class, one of my classes, just yesterday. And I want to hear what you guys have to say about this, especially as you're talking a little bit about sort of youth sport being a dark space and, you know, potentially having like a missionary or a ministry mindset towards this dark space and having that opportunity. This is something that former Major League Baseball player Josh Lindblom talked about at the 4th Global Congress and on our podcast not too long ago. I guess, what do you see as valuable and worthwhile ends of youth sport, right? Knowing full well that the YSIC, the Youth Sport Industrial Complex, has in some ways commandeered this space and has made it different from what the four of us probably experienced when we were kids participating in it. What would be appropriate end goals for parents to have through their family's participation in youth sport?
Yeah, so for me, one end goal that's becoming more and more clear just as I navigate my own family through the space is I see youth sports as almost this this opportunity where I can reinforce a gospel-based identity for my kids and not a performance-based identity. And so they're every day at football practice, at basketball practice, wrestling practice, track, whatever sport they play, this performance level identity is being reinforced around them by everybody. If you play well, you are loved, you're accepted, you're getting affection and admiration, and you have to do it again. You can't just do it once. You got to do it again to keep getting love and affection. If you don't play well, there's a lack of that love and affection. And so I want to make sure that my kids experience me as a dad, as a parent whose love for them is grounded in the fact that they're my son and daughter, which is a gospel type identity, and not based on how they perform in sport. And so I want them as they get older to look back and say, I experienced this same love that I hopefully by then understand from God through my earthly father, just by the way I played sports.
Love that, Brian. And so we would flip it around and say that the other side of the coin of that is that out of that identity and out of that being accepted out of what God says is true about you and the fact of our relationship as a father, that should make us secure enough and should make our kids secure enough that they can take their eyes off themselves and start to see other people around them. And sports just provides a great opportunity. It's a great training ground to get your eyes off yourself. Again, that almost sounds so counterintuitive because the sport culture says, no, it needs to be all about you. You have to get yours. You have to get your at best NIL deal. You have to make sure you get what's best for you and your family. You know, that's sort of been the mantra for decades. And it's like, okay, well, the gospel would say, actually, that you might be here actually to be a blessing to someone else, even in the midst of competition, even in the midst of striving to beat them on the scoreboard, you know, to subdue them on the field in the best sense of that term. You're actually also still there to love them and watch out for them. So this just happened in this golf meet the other day. So I just was driving a cart. My wife and I were with my son, and he had two people that were, you know, they had three people in their group. And one kid was just really, really struggling. I mean, every one of his balls was going out of bounds. He was a mess as we got there and we're just kind of watching. So my son and the other kid, who was actually doing really, really well, they started walking together and just sort of left the hack to fend for himself. And I thought after watching just for three holes, I just thought, all right, Trey, like, are you just going to completely abandon that kid? Because you're just going to hang out with the cool kid who's actually playing really well. You're going to leave the kid who's struggling and cussing to himself and obviously is frustrated. Are you just going to leave him to himself? And a few holes later, he actually peeled away from that kid and went over to this kid. And I affirmed that in him later. I didn't say anything to him about what he was doing playing-wise. But I said, dude, that was a great move on your part just to go back and talk to that kid, you know? So there's all kinds of moments like that are happening at every practice, at every game, every post game, traveling on the bus, two games, there are chances to actually pay attention to your teammates in a way that is shaping you to live a life of paying attention to other people, which again is really what the gospel is about.
You know, Ed, that golf example hits home. I just came off a golf tournament, and obviously this happens from foursome to foursome, threesome to threesome. There's the kid who's struggling, the two that seem to get along, the one that that sort of lingers behind and just, you know, does it on its own or has to sort of endure it on, in my case, on his own. So those are the types of things that we spend time talking with our team about. And yet, Chad doesn't get this. He's, you know, golf, he doesn't understand golf. But, you know, that's, it's okay, Chad. You'll catch up.
Well, when it becomes a sport, I'll care about it. Just kidding, Brian.
It's
just
on
kidding,
its way. It's on its
We're
way.
We're golf guys, Brian Bolt. I'm a golf guy now. I'm a youth
Sorry,
sport
Chad.
Golf guy.
I know. One, I know. Yeah. I
he wanted basketball, but he found his true love, the one good sport. So I wonder, so you guys have spent a lot of time thinking about this subject, studying this subject, and then writing about it. And you make it very clear in your subtitle that, you know, your primary audience here are parents, Christian parents. But I wonder if I could ask you, and it might not be fair, if you had a room full of leaders in the youth sport industrial complex, right? So these are, and I talk to these people, right? People that, hey, I started with one baseball team and now I have 20 travel teams and two facilities. And wow, I've turned this into quite a little business, right? And sometimes with a big heart and because they came in with play, they come and ask me questions like, okay, now how do I do this right? If you could get these folks, because this is an entrepreneurial space right now, and people are moving into this space mostly with good intentions, often with good intentions.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, business is business, and the other sort of byproduct of this is that as these expensive routes to youth sports continue to grow, the civil routes continue to diminish, right? The opportunities for kids that just don't have that kind of money just continues to diminish. So if you could get everybody in a room, you know, some of the people that are leaders, maybe at a more macro level than parents navigating the space, what sort of direction would you go? What sort of advice would you give?
Another great question.
Ed, can I take a stab first?
Oh, for sure. Go ahead, Brian.
I want to say the same thing. I would say what all of the research that has been done is screaming at us, and it is we need to uphold a high value of play for our kids. Like that, all of the secular research is saying the same thing that we're saying in this book, that if we don't uphold a higher value of play and really make it fun for our kids, they are going to continue quitting sports at an astronomical rate. And so the most recent stat out there is that 70% of kids quit sports by the age of 13, in large part because it's not fun. And so if I had a room of all these people, I would say to them the exact same thing that I would say to our local football league, which has just, ready for this, Ed?
Go ahead.
No name. You can do some research and figure it out. We have, again, well-intentioned, right? We have taken our entire youth football system and tried to marry it with the high school philosophy. And so from third grade all the way through sixth grade at the youth level, we're trying to teach them the same plays, the same language, the same offensive system. And my kid has already said, I don't want to play football anymore. He's in fifth grade and it's not fun for him anymore. He's doing all of the right things. He's learning the plays, he's ready to be a high schooler next year and go into the system, but it's not fun for him anymore because we have professionalized sport for little kids. And when we professionalize sports for little kids, they want to stop playing because they just want to have fun. So I would, again, I'm glad you used that language, Brian, of well-intentioned parents, because I really believe most people in the space are well-intentioned. We're just trying to make it better than it is, but in our effort to make it better than it is, we're placing our value system of better, which is winning bigger, better, over the kids' value system, which is I want to play and have fun with my friends.
Wow, that's good, Brian. And you know what ends up happening, we talked about this the other day, even in that football system, is that there are some fifth grade kids that are getting it and they love it.
Yeah.
Okay. And those are the kids that'll wind up getting all the attention. And you don't really know who's going to be good or not good in fifth grade. So that's sort of another, myth that you can identify who the great athletes are because the kid was able to dribble a ball and make two layups a game more than, you know, the other kids who are all dribbling off their legs the whole game. Or the soccer player that's able to get the one ball to go across almost by accident starts getting all the attention. And so that system that Brian just talked about even just kind of feeds into that. And we end up leaving out all these kids along the way because we think that they're behind in fifth grade because they don't understand the terminology. So that's a problem. I would want to talk to him about development and what development means. Let's focus more on development than on winning. Which, again, that's just a heresy. I'm not saying we don't want to win. It's great if we have more points at the end of the game. Of course, we're here. Part of what we're trying to do is to win games. Yes. But not at the expense of development. And I want to talk about development in two ways. Are we focusing on the fundamentals of the game? Which, when you focus on the fundamentals, you may end up losing for a while on the scoreboard because you're trying to teach how to do things the right way. Okay? In the midst of having fun, can we learn the game, the fundamentals of the game, instead of just trying to win this game? And so, how that shows up in basketball, for example, is you may have one play that works all the time for this one kid to score, and you just keep doing that over and over and over again because it always works, and you get points, and you have more points at the end of the game, and you feel great about it. Meanwhile, you haven't really taught the kids how to run offenses. You just taught the kids how to get that one kid the ball so he or she can score. Okay, so let's work on fundamentals of the sport that we're involved in. And my goodness, could we even put some psychological development and emotional development? Could we incorporate that in and actually learn from the best of what sports psychology is teaching? Could we take seriously the emotional side of an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old or, my goodness, a junior high kid who's losing his or her mind hormonally? Can we take that seriously in the context of them playing sports? And can we teach them how to manage their emotions and how to work through stress and things like that? I think all of that, if people are paying me money, I would like to think I owe that to them, actually, not just to win games. Learn the sport, learn how to develop emotionally and psychologically. That's what I'd love to say to entrepreneurs. I probably and get booed out of the room because we don't want to do that anymore. We don't want to do that. And I think even that's a good question. And, community to community, why not? Like, where did that disappear to? The fundamentals of the game and helping them grow in other ways besides just physically. Why is that not on our list of objectives anymore? I'll leave it at that. I think I just froze for a second, but that's enough. I think that would be a great conversation to have with that group of people.
You did freeze. The power of editing, that'll give me an opportunity a little later to do some work. That's fine. Brian, both of you guys sort of referred to, and sorry, I'm jumping in on Chad's space here, but what I when I hear your story about that well-intentioned football decision, I think too about even success in the long run. So the idea that, okay, if there's a local level coach who teaches a good brand of football and it's this style of defense, this style of offense, this mindset, this approach, and then they take it to the next level, well, they have a new toolkit. So I'm not even sure a uniform system would lead to better success. I often, like if I have a golfer who's been a basketball player as well, they handle stress way differently. Their athleticism is different. I always try to diversify the athletic experiences of the athletes that I get at the college level. It's great if they have a diversity of experiences. And I think too that multiple systems and entrepreneurial coaches and those sorts of things, you could even make an argument that that would be a better preparation to be able to play at a higher level. But I totally understand how you look at some of these systems, you go, okay, they're doing it right because they start early. And that to me is just interesting that there are ways to think about these things very differently, that people, what we do is we compare very quickly to the next township over. And in that comparison, sometimes make some rash decisions. And we do that at a micro level too, as parents, right? We watched, okay, they put their child in this program and that had success. Therefore, we need to do that. The comparison is anxiety producing for parents, probably more than kids.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and comparison is no longer just local. We as parents experience it on a global level now because of social media. So we're not just comparing our kids and our family to the Joneses next door. We can compare them to the Joneses in Nashville, Tennessee, who we just saw on Facebook, their kids doing this and this, and they're in this national league and they're this far along. And so it does, it breeds this like, are we doing enough to stay up with everybody else for the benefit of our kid? Are we giving them enough opportunities? Are we putting them in the enough right thing so that they're not behind? Because everything we look at on screens would give evidence that we're behind everybody else.
Yeah, and behind only, this seems so simple, but we just need to keep saying it. They're behind in what? Their ability to perform in this sport, which when they're 23 is just not going to matter at all anymore. Even if they wind up going and playing in college, when they're 23, it won't matter. What will matter is, do they know how to engage people? Do they know how to agape love others? Do they know how to pay attention to the least of these? Which, Brian, you've been talking about this so much when we've had these opportunities, and maybe I'll even pass it to you. Go. Can I give you the baton, Brian? Talk about that theme that just seems to be dripping all over the gospel, that again, we don't seem to pay hardly any attention to that at all until the kids are out of our house. Have we given them opportunities to actually do the things that Jesus said were most important?
Yeah, I mean, sports in general is a very look at me culture. It's me focused, which some of that you need, right? Like, you do want to get better and you want to improve and you need to look at the mirror, look at your own tape and all that stuff. But the Gospels are going to show a picture of Jesus constantly going into settings, and he would take the focus off self, and he would look at and see and move towards people and give dignity to people, especially the people who are on the margin. So we have talked a lot about, man, if we're going to be investing, whether it's $100 in our kids' youth sport experience or thousands of dollars, for me, it becomes worth it, whatever I spend, if my kids learn through that experience how to engage the least of these, the marginalized in sport, that if I'm paying and investing this much money and they're learning how to ignore other people and just get theirs, it's a really bad investment for me. But if I can help them through practices and games learn how to take focus off self and see other people, that's a worthwhile investment for me.
And you can do both. So that maybe sounds soft in some listeners' ears. No, you can still pursue excellence. You can still try to be the best on the team. You can still get your extra trainings or whatever it is that you think is going to help them become a better player. But in the midst of that, don't lay aside having eyes for the others. Like, we need to do both. And most of us are not paying attention to that at all. All we're concerned about is the next lesson. And, you know, the next training and making sure that they perform a certain way. That's what's needed to change inside of me. And I'm guessing probably is true for most parents.
So that's an interesting point that you make, Ed. So much of what we've heard you talking about the last half hour has been about how we have Christian parents in youth sport, how they can help form the hearts of the young athletes. But what about the hearts of the parents, right? You mentioned social media earlier as well. If I was the czar of youth sports, I think I would put a ban on parents posting on social media about their kids' youth sports, right? Because that seems to fuel the fires and the passions that create youth sport to be such a dark place, right? That if, oh my gosh, this one of my friend's kids did so well this weekend. Again, they must be on the right team. We must be on the wrong team. They must be doing something right. We're doing something wrong. My kid's not measuring up, right? It just stokes the fires that are unhealthy for us. What would be the best advice that you could give to Christian parents about forming their own hearts in the midst of the youth sport industrial complex, knowing full well that we are being formed as parents? I told you I spent 11 and a half hours in one gym on a Saturday. What can I do as a parent, as a Christian parent, to help myself grow and develop?
Yeah.
I'll give one practical thing that I've tried to start doing. And I want to say this too. I feel like I'm talking like I know all the answers and I'm doing all the stuff right. I'm trying different things. I fail often.
That comes through in the book very clearly. I appreciate you saying that. That was one of the best parts, I thought, is you guys admitting where you fell short.
Okay, good. And I was talking to Ed yesterday. I was admitting to him some issues that I was having in youth sports where I was like, I need to take my own advice in the book because I'm doing this poorly. So just to let everyone know I'm in a process. Although I would like to see Czar Chad Carlson be all over all of youth sports. What could parents do? One of the things that I have tried to do more and it's been super helpful is grow in my own self-awareness. And so I've tried as best as I can to just stop cheering for the most part, just like be silent. And I'm trying to take inventory of like when I'm about to say something, what am I going to say and why am I going to say it? And usually what I want to say is like, go, 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 pass the ball, go get it. And it's like, they're already going to get the ball. They're already going to get it. They don't need me to add stress to that environment. And so I'm just realizing like I am somebody who adds stress to my kid just by the words that I use when I'm watching them play. Again, well-intentioned. I'm not trying to be, not trying to create a stress ball, but just realizing if I just shut up for a little bit, I learn a lot about just what's going on in my own heart and what I'm trying to do. So one practical thing I think parents can do is just try to show up at a game and not say anything and take inventory of what you would say, but also what everybody else is saying around you, not in a judgy way, but just as a way to see maybe what your kid might be experiencing on a typical Saturday or Friday at the field or court or pool.
That's good, Brian. So there's that immediacy of awareness of what's about to come out. And then there's a whole nother level of asking myself, and again, I'm a hot mess too. I still am. Where is this coming from inside of me? Yeah. Why am I so afraid of that they're missing out? Why am I so embarrassed when they don't play well? And I feel like my own identity as a 57-year-old man is somehow being threatened by the fact that my eighth grader just ran the wrong way and put the ball in the wrong basket, which happened last year. Why am I, of course that's embarrassing, but why the level of the intensity of it? Why am I so angry? And where is all the anger coming from? It's not just about this sport moment. There's other things going on in my life, and I'm using this as sort of a portal to get all my junk out at those 10-year-old, you know, soccer parents on the other side who are screaming the same kind of junk in my direction. Like, what is happening inside of me? And I need some guys in my life, and I have them, to talk that out with a little bit. I got a good enough relationship with my wife that we talk it out. Like, what is happening in us that makes us want to react? And that's helped. I got to not be afraid to look at that. And it is a little bit scary to see that I still have regrets from things that happened 40 years ago that are spilling out on a Saturday in these stands towards my kids, towards the other parents, towards the other team, towards the refs, towards the coaches. I got to do some work on my own soul that needs to be sanctified in ways that maybe I don't really want to have to look at. But again, what's the value of youth sports? It actually brings that stuff to the surface so that it can change and has an opportunity to be transformed. So love that word awareness.
Well, fantastic, gentlemen. I mean, when we think about this very dynamic situation, and you both just described with humility moments in your lives that, you know, you wish you could have back on some level. every one of us who have been youth sport parents, youth sport coaches, coaches in general, are scrolling through our own memories and feeling the same way. So if this book raises that level of awareness and puts really the emphasis on the heart, really the first is your own, right? And in many ways, it does add a new layer of responsibility when you're a parent. And you, as you talked about, Brian, you're kind of gauging your investment and trying to decide, okay, what am I getting out of this investment? And it could have real possibilities. But many times it's our own hearts, and it's the place we need to start. And so I appreciate that reminder. I had 10 more questions that just popped into my head, and unfortunately, we need to be done. So this was a fantastic conversation, but let's just put a pin in it because we want to talk again. This was fantastic. I think youth sport will continue to be a topic that people need to discuss and think about. Certainly the church needs to consider how to handle it. We didn't even get into how youth sport has invaded time and space and all the concerns that go in that direction. So we'll talk about that at another time. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for coming on the on Sport Faith Life. If people want to get a hold of the book or hear more from you, what would you say would be the best way to get in touch with you or connect with you?
Well, you can get the book at any outlet, Amazon and all the usuals have it. And we really want this to be hopefully a source that starts discussions in the church. Like you said, we didn't get to talk about it, but in small groups, maybe grabbing a hold of some other parents and saying, hey, let's just read this together. Again, not because all the answers are in there, but it'll give you language to even start having the conversations that need to be had. So you can find it anywhere that you buy books out there. And then Brian developed a website called thechristianathlete.com, and we spent time in there. There's tons of resources in there for athletes and increasingly for parents and coaches just to try to think better about these things and live better.
Yeah, thanks so much, gentlemen, for doing this good work. Thanks for connecting with us here at Sport Faith Life, and we look forward to talking with you again in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.